Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
She sent her degree and certificates for various courses that she has done with us, but nothing to confirm her qualification, and said she'd misplaced them and will get them over as soon as possible. I will confess at this point I started to feel very uneasy. Something wasn't quite adding up. I checked the online register and cannot find her. What do we do?
She'd never actually been through the process to become a chartered accountant and had lied on her CV. Is there wastage in the way that we're working? If we can work smarter? But actually, if somebody is working smart and they're under pressure and we need additional help, yeah, let's go out and hire. Our policies are very, very clear. Theft is theft. Dishonesty is dishonesty. Today it might be a plastic bag. Tomorrow it might be an avocado. And we all know they're about 50 quid these days. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, welcome back to the HRER podcast, episode 17. We're getting to the 21.
Magic 21.
Magic 21, which I forget the stat, but like only, I think it's 1% of podcasts make it to 21. So yeah. We're nearly top 1%.
Yeah. Brilliant.
What do you think of that?
I think it's amazing. A HR podcast that's going this long. And it's a competitive field as well, I would say. So
there's a lot of people that we're trying to get above on the old standings, isn't there?
Yeah. It's a pleasure to be back. We've still got things to talk about.
Oh, we have. You make sure of that with your with your fun cases. I say fun. Interesting more. So we'll the title for this one is Senior Accountant Who Lied About Her Qualification Degree. Bit of good old fashioned fraud.
Yeah, so we'll hear the crisis and we'll dive straight in.
That's me. So this is the email. Hi, Alyssa. Strange one for you. You'll recall Natalie. She has been with us for years. Great employee, never had any issues with her, and recently was in line for promotion to director. As part of the process for promotion to directorship, our practice manager was getting everything ready to send off to company's house and the insurance company. As we are a chartered accountancy practice and Natalie is an accountant, as part of the due diligence, the insurance company requested confirmation of Natalie's qualifications. I emailed Natalie and asked if she could pop over her degree and evidence of her qualifications. She sent her degree and certificates for various courses that she has done with us, but nothing to confirm her qualification, and said she had misplaced them and will get them over as soon as possible. I will confess at this point I started to feel very uneasy. Something wasn't quite adding up. I checked the online register and cannot find her. What do we do?
So this is a more common situation than you'd probably think. Not necessarily just in the accountancy field, but people lying about CVs, qualifications, in order to get jobs.
Do you know what? I believe it.
Yeah.
I actually believe it.
Do we need to scrutinise yours, Sally?
No. I'm all right. I just know people who have paid like hundreds of pounds for certificates of eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
Recently.
But yeah, I digress, please. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've come across people who've, you know, exaggerated their CVs. But to go and pay for
they paid for it to be made, signed, like the all sorts.
So there's a black market for this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day. So in this situation, we've got Natalie, who for years and years and years had pretended that she was a chartered accountant. So she said she'd done all her qualifications, and it turned out in this situation that she didn't. So she had a degree. I don't think it was an accountancy degree. I can't remember whether it was a maths degree or something like that. But she'd never actually been through the process to become a chartered accountant and had lied on her CV. So on her CV, she said she held the various relevant qualifications. This company recruited her. She was there for several years. And it obviously, as we've heard in the story, things started to not add up at the point that she was being promoted to a director. So difficult situation for the company. She was a popular member of staff, by all accounts, and good at what she did. But their concern was, you know, her entire career with the business had been based on deception.
Honesty is important. I was going to ask, was she any good at the job? So she was, she could do it.
Yeah, she's good at what she did. Well, no complaints.
Okay.
I don't think any of her clients had necessarily been, you know, sent to prison for financial irregularities or anything
That's
like
good,
that.
Isn't it?
You know, so she must have been good at what she did for her to be in line for promotion to director.
Director, yeah, anyway, yeah.
But regardless of how good she was at what she did, there's deception, dishonesty that are involved here. So, you know, it was a difficult one for the employer. Because like I say, she was well liked, but this was a serious problem that totally undermined trust and confidence in somebody who was a key part of the business.
When the trust is broken, mm-hmm. it's a big deal in any situation. We'll dive straight into the questions to ask as an employer, and we're starting off with a statistic again. 49% of UK workers are in the wrong job for their skill level. Where did HR go wrong in their hiring process with this candidate? How can HR prevent similar issues in the future?
So this statistic, it surprised me and it sort of didn't. 49% seems like a lot, but then it's not necessarily that everyone's in a job that's too hard for them. It could also mean that somebody's overqualified for the role that they're in. Yeah. So in terms of hiring processes, it's quite normal when you are making a job offer for the offer letter to say, you know, here is the offer that we're making you, the position, the salary, and it's subject to confirmation of qualifications and references. Mm-hmm. So there is normally that checking process at the beginning. What I think you can find in some sectors, particularly where it's quite a small world, that you know of people, you know, particularly if you've poached them from another company, or everybody kind of knows everybody in the industry, that actually those checks can sometimes fall through the cracks because you can think, well, this person's reputation precedes them. I don't feel like I need to get references for them. We feel like we know them well enough that we can just onboard them. The risk with that is that where you've got somebody who has managed to sort of infiltrate an industry and build themselves a bit of a reputation, that this behavior is able to perpetuate, that they're, you know, it takes a long time for them to mm-hmm. be caught out. So it's really, really important that when we are going through that hiring process, that we are consistent with everybody and that we follow our own policies and procedures, that we are making sure that if somebody has made a claim or an assertion that means that we've been convinced to offer them a job, that we have got the ability to check if we need to. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, if you've got someone who is perhaps in line for a senior position, that we go and check that they really did wash pots in a restaurant at 14. It's probably not relevant.
Not reasonable.
No. But let's make sure they did actually get the degree that they said that they did, or where they've done chartered accountancy exams, that either they've passed them or they have actually done them.
You'd hope this would be checked earlier down the line, wouldn't it, really? Before they... big promotion.
Exactly. So at the point that she was recruited, this should have been done. Now, I wasn't actually aware of this, but in the UK, the term accountant or account isn't a protected term. So you can only call yourself a solicitor if you have the relevant qualifications and you are on the role of solicitors. Yeah. You can't call yourself a doctor unless you are medically qualified and you're on the... whatever their list is called.
The doctor's list.
Yeah, the solicitors, we have the role of solicitors. I'm not entirely sure what the, you know, GMC list or whatever it is. It's a specific breach to do that. The term accountant doesn't have the same level of protection.
Okay.
So you could have someone who has a little bit of bookkeeping experience and they go out on social media and they brand themselves as an accountant. And that in itself isn't going to get them in trouble. What the problem was here is that Natalie has lied about the qualifications that she said that she'd secured when actually she hadn't.
Right.
So in itself, calling yourself an accountant, she could argue that in law, it's not a lie. Anyone could call themselves an accountant.
Bit of Excel.
Yeah. Potentially, yes. So, you know, Michael, who's excellent on Excel,
he could be an accountant.
No, I'm joking. Obviously, I know plenty of accountants. I know there's some very serious skill and brains that are involved, which is why I pay one, because I'm totally incapable of doing that sort of thing myself. It's not a specific offence to use that word, but lying about qualifications to get yourself appointed into a role, that's when we're getting into the kind of seriousness here.
Breach of trust.
Breach of trust, it's dishonesty. At its most fundamental level, it's dishonesty. Also, potentially fraud. So if you lie about something in order to secure a financial advantage, the financial advantage here being that paid employment. So the role of accountant is going to attract a much higher salary than the role of a junior bookkeeper, mm-hmm. which is what she was likely qualified to do in the absence of the
qualifications, aren't you, nowadays, really?
And yet the skills, experience, and the guarantee that you are qualified to do that kind of work. So she has secured a financial advantage through dishonesty. So potentially there is a fraud allegation here, but it's at its most fundamental level, if we were going to do a disciplinary for this person, it would be dishonesty, breach of trust and confidence, and potentially fraudulent behaviour.
Okay. Next question. So from the employee perspective, what are the potential legal and financial implications of the senior accountant lying about their qualifications on behalf of the business, i.e. working with clients and so on?
So in a sector such as accountancy, there could be some really serious consequences in terms of the company's reputation. So if you've got a client who it's then uncovered that there's been issues with their accounts where they end up in hot water with HMRC, remembering, of course, there are criminal, you know, sanctions that if someone is found to have not done what they should be doing and HMRC pursue them, a company director or individuals, they can end up in real serious trouble.
Liable? Is it?
Well, if someone has filed an incorrect tax return, mm-hmm. or, you know, they haven't paid enough tax, or, you know, they can be liable for one, big fines, penalties, and potentially criminal sanctions, depending on, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of this sort of law. But nobody wants that brown envelope from HMR saying they've done something wrong and that they're about to have a tax investigation.
Yeah, God, no.
So if some work that Natalie has done is actually negligent or is not of a standard that would be expected of a senior accountant, and it comes out that she didn't have the relevant qualifications, the company hadn't checked, and she'd been exposed to clients, that's going to put, it's going to put the company in a really difficult position, yeah. with their clients. One, yeah. they're going to be losing clients left, right, and center. But two, whether they'd be exposed to legal action, you know, if they are under contract with their clients to provide qualified or chartered accountancy services and they haven't been doing that, there's some legal exposure for them as well.
And it's the competitor rumour mill.
Exactly. So this could be something that could present real difficulties for a business. And where this came out was because when she was being promoted, it was actually the insurance company who said, look, we'd just like to make sure everything's above board. You know, we've got someone who's going to have legal responsibility for the business. The, you know, insurance implications in terms of, you know, the work that's been done. If the company hasn't done the reasonable checks that they should have done at recruitment, so they should have spotted this earlier, whether it could invalidate their insurance cover even. You know, there's this sort of thing could ripple and ripple and ripple. There's a lot of consequences where you've got someone who is in a position of trust and they're doing something that impacts people's lives and businesses, which accountancy does.
Crikey. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like she's obviously there for a long time, weren't she?
Yeah.
So let this slip for, do you know how many years she was there for, roughly? And did she have any evidence like before? When
7 or 8 years. So she put it on her CV. She didn't provide any certificates when she joined.
Her first job?
No, it wasn't her first job.
Previously?
So she'd been somewhere else, but they didn't check references and she was only working as a bookkeeper at the previous role. So she'd said that she'd worked as an accountant and she hadn't, but they didn't follow up and check. So there were lots of opportunities for them to have spot this. They could have done reference checking. They could have asked for those certificates. I mean, for me, as a solicitor, I work in a regulated profession. I've worked in firms in the past where they'll do spot checks through the year. So even though you're supposed to obviously provide everything when you're recruited, at various points through the year, they'll say, right, it's your turn. Can you bring in your degree, proof that you passed the LPC? And I mean, we have registration numbers anyway for the role of solicitors, but they'll do spot checks and just say, you know, just to satisfy our insurance company, they'll randomly check people through the year.
It keeps people on the toes, doesn't it? I mean, I've got a few of my mates, a lot of them working like blue collar jobs, and they get like, because they operate machinery, they get like drug tested and stuff, and they'll just pick people.
Yeah.
I suppose it's like a similar thing, isn't it? But
yeah, and it's a way that then if, you know, on recruitment, we've covered recruitment a few times when we've done these podcasts and having proper procedures and things like that, that if someone slipped through the net, that's that extra layer of protection that, you know, if you're doing spot checks and things like that, particularly where it's something that could affect your business in the way that this one would, that, you know, we've got that safety net.
If everyone's who they say they are.
Yeah. And everyone expects it. If you know that, you know, the company's going to do spot checks like this, you're not going to put up a fight when, you know, say, oh yeah, well, I know this is just sort of how it goes here.
This is the culture, yeah.
I mean, I used to keep mine in my desk at work. So I had a folder with my degree in and everything else. So it was as easy as that. I didn't have to go home and find them. Everything was there. I had my folder over. There you go. And that was it.
It would as well, them sort of process, I imagine, keep out the rabble, like keep out the pretenders as such.
It makes it harder.
Yeah.
Then. I mean, like you were saying, you know, if people can buy these certificates on eBay, then, we need to have a think about how we verify stuff like that. And it's, compliance checks and things like that are a major concern for businesses. It's why with the software, with our platform, we've got the Trust ID link, so that when people are checking people's right to work, that their documents can be properly checked by a verified platform. Because the obligation on employers is if you want to employ someone and you have to check their right to work and their ID and they bring you a passport, there's a very unhelpful page on the .gov website to tell you how to spot a fraudulent passport. Sometimes airport workers can't spot them. So how on earth are you supposed to be able to look and see whether a document's real? So actually having a proper verifiable checking process can be invaluable. It just kind of lifts the weight off. So there's the ability to do that with right to work and ID, which is why we've done it with the platform. Absolutely. But when it comes to things like qualifications, we perhaps need to be a bit more creative about how we check things.
Is there an app for that yet?
I don't know if there is. I think there are services where people will go and check these things for you and they'll get to the bottom of it. But at its most basic level, follow up on references. Find out where someone's worked before. Ask what role they were doing when they were there. And inconsistencies are more likely to appear. So if there's something where you think, actually, this doesn't add up, you don't need to be absolutely sure that something's a fake or a fraud to be able to go, you know what, this situation makes us a little bit uncomfortable. We're just going to pause this here. We're not going to onboard you just yet.
You get a general feeling as well, I think. Like you get it's called thin slicing. I've been reading a book about it recently where you meet someone and like they'll tell you about themselves. And within like 2 minutes, you've got a good idea of whether they're full of it or not.
Yeah.
But obviously it helps to have like the documents to back it up, but just ask them to bring in the bloody certificates, man.
Yeah. And what? If it looks like a child's drawn it, maybe we go check where it came from.
The child probably has. Next point, question to ask as an employer. Businesses regret half of new hires amid skill shortage. Should we consider termination or are there other suitable measures that can balance fairness and company policy?
So in this situation, Natalie was fired. They said, the fact that she'd lied for so many years, they said there were several opportunities for her to have come clean. You know, once she's onboarded, go, actually, look, there's a bit of an issue with my qualifications. I'd like to go through this process and do them. But her CV was littered with lies.
A one-time thing.
It's something that she'd obviously sort of built this profile, managed to get herself into a position where it was a senior job. And in terms of credibility with clients and her colleagues, they had to take a really strong line on this. And this level of fundamental dishonesty absolutely goes to the heart of the employment relationship. That is gross misconduct, and it was enough to terminate in this situation.
You can't trust her again, can you?
No. Particularly where it's something accountancy saying that you have a fundamental qualification, you wouldn't believe anything that she said ever again. Because if she's been able to almost build this entire fake profile of herself, she'd been not necessarily that sophisticated, but very consistent in the lies that she'd told. It's going to be very, very hard to take
daily white lies as well. And people ask you certain questions. Like I can imagine in the workplace, people would have been like, "Oh, who was your, who was on the course with you?" And she'd have made names up. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, very Suits. Isn't it?
I've not seen Suits.
You've not seen Suits?
I've seen bits
all
of
about
it.
This sort of thing. So somebody who lies about going to Harvard and getting his law qualifications.
Harvey Specter.
Yeah. Well, no, he's not the guy who lies, but yeah. The whole premise of the first few seasons of Suits centers around this sort of topic.
Just lying about
qualifications.
Being qualled. Well, there's better ways to the top, isn't there?
But in terms of that regretting new hires, it's that onboarding process, that recruitment process, isn't it? So let's really understand who it is that we're taking on, why we're taking somebody on to start with. And it was something that Lucy touched on from Never Fully Dressed in our guest episode, where they really scrutinize, do we need someone or is it a case that we can work smarter? So making sure that actually we can justify the roles that we are creating or the people that we're bringing into the business. And that it's not just that we're being lazy in our approach to, not necessarily that we're lazy in how we're working, but lazy in our approach to, hiring people solves every problem.
Not
because it doesn't.
No,
exactly.
Doesn't.
Rather than looking at, well, is there a better way of doing this? Do we need to be doing all the things that we've got on our to-do list? Is there wastage in the way that we're working? If we can work smarter, But actually, if somebody is working smart and they're under pressure and we need additional help, yeah, let's go out and hire. But when we're doing that, making sure that, well, actually, what is it that we're looking for? What's the fit that we need in the business? And in terms of fit, I'm not saying, you know, someone who's the same as everybody else, but where do we want their strengths to be? Is it that we want someone who's emotionally intelligent, resilient? Do we want someone who can problem solve or someone who can be really creative? Making sure that we're looking at those skills as well as qualifications. And it's something when I go out and do management training that I really kind of hone in on is, what are we looking at when we are interviewing? What is it that we're trying to pull out of people during those processes? What are we trying to identify? Right, because it should be a given that someone should be good at the job, they should have the qualifications and be good at what they're doing.
They should apply otherwise, should
exactly.
They? You want to look at the profile of the person.
Yeah, what else are they going to be bringing to the business? What is it that we're missing within our team that we think this person's going to really round us off so that we can be a really high performing team?
Absolutely, there's no point just hiring for the sake of it, is there? Just another body through the door, they can do the same
job. Bum on a seat. They're the ones that often get regretted, is where it is just a warm body who's going to kind of fill a gap in a process. We haven't really applied enough thought to that.
No, I think it's best to be, I don't want to say picky, precise. Precise with recruitment.
I think really knowing your workforce as well. So, you know, you might have a creative, someone who's really organized, someone who, you know, super resilient, someone who's got those really amazing social skills. I think they're all working really well together, but what is it that we're missing? Mm. So really understanding, outside of skills and experience, the personal attributes that someone's going to bring. So if we've got a load of extroverts, if we bring an introvert, how's that going to,
balance?
Is someone going to feel very isolated, or actually is it going to make everyone a bit more measured and kind of round us off really well? So thinking about those additional elements as well, rather than just focusing on, you know, the certificates that someone can have.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on the certificates, yes, because that's the whole purpose of this podcast. But let's also think about, you know, when we're thinking about hiring regret, well, why? What is it that's gone wrong with this person? Because fundamentally, you know, we've put them in post. It's our responsibility. Some people are very good at putting on an act in interview. They're very, very good in those first 2 or 3 months. I always refer to it as being like that first date thing where everyone's...
Funny moon period, isn't
it? Exactly, you know, everyone period, kind of, they put their makeup on, they brush their hair, and, you know, we put out our best self in the first few weeks when we're seeing somebody, and the same when we go into a new job. We are our best selves. But when that mask falls, do we really know what's underneath that person? And a proper hiring and onboarding process, we should be rooting that out nice and early.
Interesting point you made there about like honeymoon periods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where this is
yours over.
Oh,
is it? Have we seen the real Ollie?
This might explain a bit behind me. But I can't remember who said it, but like, you know how people naturally they'll put like their best clothes on the first day,
mm-hmm.
like they regress as the relationship goes on, mm. like starting trackies.
Oh, it's good to manage expectations, yeah, go in low and build up.
Then when you're ready, you get the full three-piece suit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From a male perspective, of course.
Yeah.
Be a nice dress on a
So my husband, in the first few weeks of when we first met, I think he did wear a shirt, made me dinner.
Oh, heck.
We've been together 14 years. I think that might be the only dinner he's ever made me. So he started high and then regressed for sure.
Worked backwards.
Yeah.
Did he wear like rigger boots and stuff?
He wears work boots. He's a tradesman, isn't he? But I'd have to wrestle him into a shirt these days if I want him to.
Class.
But, yeah, one dinner, which I found out actually that his mother had made half of it and sort of covered it up, and then he heated it up in the oven. It was steak and garlic potatoes. So yeah, it was a good meal. I remembered it. But also the fact that it was one isolated meal in 14 years. That's also why it sticks in the memory. So.
Okay, crikey. Final question, as an employer, does this class as dishonesty? We've got a few other examples as well. You mentioned to me and Dawn last week about a guy who ran someone over.
Yeah, so dishonesty in itself is, you know, often enough to be able to dismiss somebody. Mm. However, there are grades to this sort of thing. A little white lie about why you're 10 minutes late to work, you know, it could be, one of my kids threw up on me and... Oh, man, the traffic and whatever. You know what? Maybe they just rolled out of bed a bit late. You're probably not going to fire somebody for that.
Well, that
even
fly,
though it's dishonesty.
You? Yeah, yeah. It's not malicious, is it?
No. And then the other end of the scale, we've got, so it's a guy who, he crashed his work van and was involved in a collision and there was a pedestrian involved. Pedestrian lived. We're not, just to kind of clarify that. However, in his immediate post-accident reaction, he grabbed the dash cam. He was on a bridge. I believe from memory. So there was a river running underneath it. He grabbed the dash cam and he threw it out the window into the river. So the accident was his fault, is what the witness evidence came out, he lied in the initial aftermath, and I think he hoped that by throwing the dash cam away that he'd get away with
evidence.
Yeah.
Gone, yeah.
And, you know, when we got the witness statements from other people who were involved in the incident and sort of the net starting to close in, he admitted that he panicked. That level of dishonesty, you know, the fact that he has injured a member of the public and his first reaction was to immediately try and throw evidence out the window.
Yeah, yeah.
One, there's kind of a character thing going on.
That's
there.
A natural reaction. Like, it comes up to the thin slicing thing. That's what his instinct.
Yeah.
Has told him to do.
And also lied. So he lied about what happened in the kind of lead up to that. So yes, that level of dishonesty. Enough to dismiss. Mm-hmm. One of the key cases that I refer to in a lot of the training that I go out to is major supermarket, and there was a cashier who at the end of his shift would go shopping, and you know, have the 5p plastic bags. So he'd pay for his shopping, didn't pay for the 5p plastic bag, took his shopping and off he goes. Oh. So has paid for the shopping, but the 5p plastic bag wasn't paid for.
Oh my God. Shock, that's a crime.
Dismissed, and the supermarket won at tribunal. So he brought an unfair dismissal case on the ground, said, look, it was a plastic bag. And the supermarket said, no, our policies are very, very clear. Theft is theft. Dishonesty is dishonesty. Today it might be a plastic bag. Tomorrow it might be an avocado. And we all know they're about 50 quid these days.
Yeah.
So they were saying, actually, the value of the item to them doesn't matter. In their policies and in their corporate approach, theft is theft.
It's the action.
And the tribunal was happy with that and said it was very, very clear in their communications in terms of, I mean, there were other elements. I mean, I can't remember if it was one plastic bag or several, but actually, how many employees do major supermarkets have? Thousands, tens of thousands.
Yeah,
every single one of them takes a 5p plastic bag. One, the environmental impact of all these plastic bags, but two.
The turtles.
Soon, the turtles. Two, it soon mounts up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So actually, when we're talking about theft, and whenever I put that as a scenario to people, often they say, well, it's a plastic bag, you know, final written warning. Well, actually, no, it was enough in this situation to dismiss because the employer was very clear about their policy towards dishonesty. And initially, when challenged on it, I believe in this situation, he said it was a mistake, he'd admitted it. But they showed that on the screen, when he said, finish your shopping, how many bags do you want to add? And he said zero.
Oh, receipts.
So that is clear that he had the option to add it on and he chose not to. So he said that's where the dishonesty was. It wasn't a case that he'd sort of just, you know, thought he'd picked one he had out of his back pocket or something like that, you know, that there was a clear mistake or that he was distracted and thought he'd already put it on.
Like,
yeah, you know, it could have been, you know, he was chatting to a colleague, picked the bag up and forgotten to put it on.
But
no, he chose no bags. And they said that in itself is a dishonest action.
I don't like it, but I kind of see like that might snowball. Do you know what I mean? That could be a habit building thing. Yeah.
But when we talk about that grades of dishonesty, the person who lies about why they're 10 minutes late to work versus that, you might think, well, actually, they're probably within the same realms of seriousness. But when looking at this, we need to be very, very clear. Well, what is our company policy on this sort of thing? And if any level of dishonesty is a no-no, we need to be very clear in our policies and procedures and in our communications with our staff so that it shouldn't come as a surprise.
You set an example, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you expect people to follow it. And so they're just setting the press. I still don't like it, but I kind of see like policy in it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. We are going into employee questions now. We'll start with a statistic. Over 80% of 18 to 25-year-olds entering the workforce have lied about their qualifications. See, I told you, these certificates. I lied about my qualifications, otherwise I wouldn't have got the job. It's a very tough job market. Can you empathise with that? I don't think I can.
No, I mean, yes, the job market is tough, but you know what? Sometimes you have to take the crap jobs to
life's
get yourself...
Tough.
It is.
Life's tough.
It is. And you know what? I've taken some rubbish jobs over the years. None of the law firms I've worked for, you've all been lovely. but pre-kind of law, you know, I've been a pot washer.
Mm.
I remember when I was a university student and I got a job working with one of the nightclubs and I'd be stood in the street with flyers watching puddles freeze over, handing flyers out to people, and then I'd have to go into the club with a camera and take pictures of drunk people so they could buy the pictures afterwards, pre-camera phones. I was one of them. And I had to wear hot pants. So I was out in the street in like -3 in the winter outside... What was the club in Cardiff? I can't remember what it was called now.
Was it Wales?
Yeah.
Freezing.
It was bloody freezing. And that was, I'd say that's probably one of, I'd rather have been pot washing. I think it was one of the worst jobs I ever did. But you know what? You do it. And it's something that I remember when I was going for graduate positions and they'd be like, you know, tell me about a time when you had resilience. And I'd be like, I'll tell you about a time I had resilience and stood in -3 in a pair of hot pants in the Cardiff winter. You know, and it's one, it shows a bit of personality and that you've got a bit of humour, but two, that you know what? You're prepared to do the grunt work. Mm-hmm. And back when I was before I was a paralegal, when you wanted to get legal work experience, you know, 2 weeks in a post room when people still sent post and you'd be franking mail all day.
Oh my God.
And you think, well, what kind of possible legal work experience does that give you? None. Absolutely none.
You've got to shovel the mud before you can climb the mountain.
Yeah. So you know what? You do what you can to get on the job ladder and build your connections and work your way through. Lying and cheating isn't the way to do it. So no, I don't have empathy with it.
Right answer. Mm. Sometimes I know you have to abide by a policy, but I'd like you to be more sterner in your moves. But I know you've got you're a professional, aren't you? Yeah. So
have to be measured.
You have to be measured. Yeah, this is correct. Second one. What actions can I take to prove my dedication to my role despite the lack of formal qualifications?
So I think it's that you've done the grunt work, isn't it? You know, the legal profession is very difficult to get into. There is still a kind of elitism to it, so that if you can afford private education, you're more likely to get into the better universities. If your parents have got the connections in the big firms, you're more likely to get those jobs. That's kind of a 90s, 2000s attitude, which, you know, the professions work really, really hard to eradicate. But if you don't have those connections, if you haven't had those best schools or been to those universities, it's work experience. It's getting out there and kind of
the grind,
agreeing to do the rubbish jobs for very little money to build yourself a profile, a reputation, and build those connections yourself from the ground up.
Get your reputation and make yourself known.
Yeah. It's hard work. It's not easy, but often the best things that are worth having, it's hard work to get there. You know, I've worked the 100-hour weeks. Mm-hmm. I have missed out on family time. I've missed out on social occasions. I've worked through the night to get a job that either I didn't see the point of or the value of it, but I was asked to do it, and so I did it. And okay, it's not necessarily a healthy environment. It's probably a good thing that lots of firms are moving away from that, but that was the only way to get through when I was, you know, before I was qualified lawyer.
Yeah. If you want to do something, you... Mm-hmm. By any means necessary. If you've got a goal, you can.
Relevant work experience goes a long way if you're lacking formal qualifications. There are routes even into the law these days where you don't necessarily have to have a law degree. There are ways through with legal apprenticeships. It takes time, it's a lot of work, and it takes longer, but you know, it's like I say, it's relevant work experience.
It takes about 6 hours to make a roast dinner, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As opposed to like a burger, 15 minutes. I know which one I'd rather eat. The roast dinner. It takes longer. Metaphor.
What a superb analogy.
Metaphor.
Compared to getting qualified as a solicitor.
I'd rather have a roast dinner. Last question as an employer. How will this incident affect my career within the company and in the broader job market? I mean, you can even relate this back to Natalie.
Yeah, so with Natalie, I suppose it depends. If she goes on to another business who doesn't go and check her references, she could be able to do this all over again. But in the most part, this sort of thing would probably be career-ending for somebody. I think particularly these days as well with social media, LinkedIn, you know, these stories kind of get out there as well.
They do,
you know, the accountancy world, a bit like the legal world, it's quite a small world. You know, you tend to kind of know a lot of people within the field.
You all talk, don't you, in your private chats.
Yeah, if someone's considering lying about qualifications, it's just not worth it. You know, something that you do to think, well, I need to do this to get ahead could actually mean that you are never able to get ahead. And it could mean the end of your career.
I imagine it leaves a stench in the air around you for the rest of your career, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Lessons learned. The cost of hiring staff is almost double their salary during the first year of employment. What emergency measures can HR departments take to screen candidates right in the workplace in future?
So it's really, really crucial that we do follow our proper hiring and onboarding procedures. Mm-hmm. They're there for a reason. So making sure that we are, you know, really clear about where we're getting our people from, what it is that we're testing at interview level. What if we've got an interview, say, template that we've been using for the last 15 years? Well, actually, is it still appropriate? Are we asking the right stuff? Or is it just kind of run-of-the-mill things because you think, well, I need to interview this person, it's a tick box? Well, no, every question that we are asking There should be a reason why we're asking it.
You're building profiles of people, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah. So have a think about what is it that we're asking these people? What information are we trying to get? If they're telling us stuff, how and we're going to give a job on the basis of that, how can we verify it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. On that sort of onboarding thought, our process is quite good.
Our processes are brilliant. So in terms of the system, you know, we've already mentioned Trust ID, that right to work isn't just a nice to have, it's an actual legal requirement. We should hold for every single employee in our business evidence of their right to work. If we don't, there can be criminal sanctions and fines of tens of thousands for companies and company directors.
But it's tens of thousands per employee.
Per employee. Yeah, yeah. So if you've got 10, 15, 20 employees that don't have the right to work, you know, this gets found out, you're looking at hundreds of thousands and criminal sanctions. Mm-hmm. So it's super, super important that we take this really, really seriously. And the HERO system, it's one of the things that I'm most proud of, is our onboarding function. So we can issue a contract of employment. That has to be given on or before day one of employment, or mm-hmm. automatically someone has the right, if they're bringing another employment claim, to tag that on as a claim. It's up to a month's pay, like that, straight away. So failure to provide a statement of terms is the claim. Mm-hmm. And we have to do that by day one of employment. So our system, it generates one automatically as soon as you've put in that information for the employee. Right to work checks have to be done before somebody starts work. If you've got someone on a trial basis or they're volunteering, no. Before they come onto your premises and they do any work, we have to check right to work. That is done in less than 10 clicks, I think, through the system.
I think it's less than it. It's a few like screenshots of your face and what have you as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, and super, super easy for the employee to do. And you know what? It makes the employer look really good because it's nice and slick.
We did it.
Yeah.
We
and did, easy to do, therefore.
Yeah, we did it, yeah.
Yes, idiot proof.
I'm kidding. And also the ability to set onboarding tasks as well. So, you know, saying we need a computer for this person, we need their office setting up, actually we'd like someone to greet them on their first day and show them around, so we can schedule all of that sort of stuff in. So not just the compliance stuff that will get us into legal hot water if we don't do it, but also the softer side of things that
means setting them up to succeed,
yeah,
in
we're
future,
more likely to retain that person mm-hmm. then, rather than having them turning up and having no idea who's meeting them and where they're supposed to go. So
like you with your library yeah, in the mug, yeah,
exactly,
I remember that.
Yeah. So like I say, our onboarding is something I'm really, really proud of, and it's super powerful because even if you only employ 3 or 4 people and you're operating on a really small budget, it makes you look much slicker and much kind of better set up than perhaps you might be, and it's super cheap.
It's super cheap, of course, yeah. We all like stuff cheap, don't we?
Yeah.
Key themes, so with Natalie, mm-hmm. what happened? Do you know much about if she found work again or...?
I don't know if she found work again. I mean, she was dismissed. She didn't put up much of a fight either in terms of dismissal. Once she knew she was kind of banged to rights, that was sort of it. But kind of real key learning points is that attention to detail, proper recruitment practices, making sure that we're onboarding people in the right way. And if something doesn't quite feel right, have a chat with HR or your employment solicitor and think, you know what? We've just got a couple of questions about this person. How can we approach it in a sensitive way if you're not a company that's, say, doing spot checks and things like that? You know, never, ever sit on something like this. If we think there's a problem, let's get out in front of it.
Nip it in the bud, innit? Yeah. Best to. Yeah, I think that's all we've got time for.
Yeah.
Flown by again.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. You know, really, really loving all the feedback and continuing to enjoy this, Ollie. It's
we're getting better at it, maybe.
I hope. Unless it's like your sort of first date, first impression will start rubbish, set expectations and get better.
We're going to get better, don't worry. Yeah. I've been putting on a front this whole time. Summed up my words. Yeah, thanks again. We'll see you next time. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.